Like, you have one of these brochures that we've just produced. You may have heard it denigrated recently. I offer it to you for your...
And here are more program schedules if they want them.
Thank you. Is this okay now, John? Okay, thank you. All right. The technical problems took long enough for most of you to get back in. So I first of all, want to add to the overwhelming welcome you've already received from those who preceded me who represent Houston. I want to thank you, each and every one of you, from whatever far-flung outpost you may have come to our fair city to volunteer your weekend to do this this hard work. And I respect and honor what you represent and the dedication that you bring to your tasks as national representatives of my foundation. My report was written several weeks ago, and it's right inside of the front tab there, behind number two. And I'm really not going to spend the one third of the 33 minutes that I have to speak to you. I am choosing to just let you reference my written remarks regarding the administration, the operations, the technical aspects, the financial aspects, the elections, developmental and other issues, which I wrote of earlier this month. And I'm more than happy to visit with you about anything that you may wish at the conclusion of my remarks. I do wish to just mention a couple of I think, very positive things that are on KPFT's horizon. One, the fact that a brand new 100,000-watt transmitter is actually operating at KPFT right now. And though it is only operating at 28,000 watts while we await a final piece of paper from the FCC, the unit is functioning well. It seems happy in its new home, and we anticipate great things in the coming days and weeks, months and years, as KPFT operates at a full 100,000 watts here in the Upper Texas Gulf Coast. Also in transit to Houston as we speak is a 1,000-watt digital transmitter, which will also be brought into the broadcast chain by the end of February. We also have already begun working on a grant project for the Public Telecommunications Facilities Project that, as soon as the government does its magic with funding fiscal year 2007, we will apply for that when the window opens. It's normally in February and probably won't be this year. But as soon as it opens, we intend to jump through that window and replace a lot of the very antiquated studio equipment that we have. We're using boards in our studio that are closer to 15 years old. We are looking forward to replacing nearly all of the nuts and bolts in the actual broadcast chain with this PTFP grant that we intend to obtain this year. I'm also very proud that by working with the local station board and our development department that we were able to obtain a $20,000 grant for strategic planning and board development from the Houston Endowment, and that's a very important first step that we anticipate great things coming out of utilizing this $20,000 to envision where KPFT needs to move in the next months, year, 3 years, and 5 years. As we approach KPFT's 40th anniversary, which is just over 36 months away. And finally, in my opening remarks, I'd like to also say how proud I was to be standing with my colleague Brian DeShazer from the Archives and my dear friend Dr. Obadike Kamau as we stood in the Terry Library at Texas Southern University in front of the Barbara Jordan Archives, where the only complete set of papers detailing the entire Watergate history outside of Washington, D.C. exist, among millions of other pieces of important work, including Barbara Jordan's desk and some other amazing things. And the fact that KPFT and Pacifica were able to bond with Texas Southern University, I think, is something that we have worked toward for a couple of years. Obadike and I have talked about this for 2 years, and I'm happy to continue the tradition that Brian instituted in presenting the important work that we have preserved, our history that he's presented over the past year in touring America and saving the sound of the archives and sharing it with important institutions from coast to coast, and now here, I think importantly, on the Third Coast. That work in at least a small way is represented, and that, I think, is a great thing. You know, I wasn't sure even a few days ago, as KPFT began its winter fund drive, which is going okay under the circumstances. One circumstance I'll share with you is that yesterday morning, 5 of the 7 phone lines in our phone bank were out, and the phone company insisted that the problem was in our building. Our chief engineer said he knew it was at the central switch, and the AT&T people from Southwestern Bell said, well, no, it's something inside your facility, and we can send a guy out to check the switches there, but the earliest we can do it will be Saturday morning. Steve Brightwell said, well, okay, so what I'm getting from you is that we have to go on the air every hour beginning now until tomorrow morning and talk about what a shitty company AT&T is. in the hope that perhaps that would motivate them, but it didn't. And when the technician showed up sometime after 9 o'clock this morning and met with Steve and went into our basement and went into the engineering room, all he could do was confirm that Steve was right and that there was nothing that he could do. And so we've spent 27 hours with only 2 phone lines working on our pledge drive. We got on the air and talked about it. We asked our listeners if anyone knew anyone at AT&T and wanted to preserve the reputation of this company, that they should make some phone calls on our behalf. About 12:30 this afternoon, an automated phone call came into line 1 in the pledge room, and it said that the service problem on your line has been solved, and suddenly the other 5 lines were working again.
Oh, my God. Radio.
And I don't know what made that happen, but we're back, and our programs have begun making their goal from that point on. We were wondering why we struggled yesterday. Many of you know me. I've been the general manager now for 5 full years. I came to this place of becoming the general manager the beginning of February 2002. One of the first changes after the revolution, if you will. So I stand before you today because I am the general manager of KPFT, and I'm the custodian of this valuable jewel that is the license that Pacifica holds here in the city of Houston as a public trust. And it's a sacred burden to me. It's a burden of trust, and it's one with which I struggle as the imperfect person I am. You know, as I said, I accepted this position 5 years ago next week, and I'd like you who already know me to maybe know a little bit more about me. And those of you who don't know me, I'd like you to know a little bit of from where I come, what I believe and think and feel. My experience with KPFT in Pacifica extends back to 1974. When I volunteered at the station when it was downtown when I was a college student. I've been a volunteer behind the scenes. I've been an on-air program host for nearly 10 years. I've been a part-time employee in KPFT's membership office when we got our very first computer back in the mid-1980s. I then became the program director until I resigned in 1989 over differences with Pacifica management in the direction that Pacifica was choosing to follow down the road of something called the Healthy Station Project, something CPB was selling nationally at the time. And for a while, I was a rather lonely voice speaking out at local station board meetings about the divergence between the mission and the vision of Blue Hill and where Pacifica, in Houston at least, from my observation, was going. I was a member of those who struggled to speak up in opposition and attempted to keep the flame of Pacifica alive in Houston through those many dark years of the 90s. I was a teacher, a speaker at town hall meetings. Reluctantly, I'm told I was a leader of the take-back movement in Houston prior to and through the revolution that has brought us to this place here today. And I was asked to apply for this job. I laughed when people asked. I thought it was kind of crazy. But it began to haunt me. It woke me up at night. And I thought, you know, if not me, well, who? You know, would they have the perspective that I had? Would they care? Would they have the dedication? And indeed, would they actually have the love for Pacifica that I do, for my Pacifica, for KPFT? So, essentially, I opened myself up to the possibility. I didn't politic or campaign or even greatly desire to have this immense life change come to me, my family, and all that it would entail, though I knew it would be a lot. I was simply willing to let it be so if it were meant to be. And, you know, something more about me, and I don't mean this to sound like an egotistical sermonette, but I do intend this to be, if you're willing to receive it, a sermonette. I come from an Irish Catholic family. I was born in Jersey City. People don't like to say that. People don't like to say that in Texas. I grew up in Bayonne, New Jersey. I went to Catholic school. I was an altar boy. I knew Latin when I was in the third grade. I thought I might want to be a priest when I grew up. That was long before I had my divergence of opinion with the Pope. You know, I call myself a Zen Catholic today. I consider myself a Christian. You know, it's something people seem afraid to own. But I believe, you know, what Jesus tried to teach. And I try to walk a righteous path. I also believe there are many, many paths to truth. And I honestly do honor and respect anyone who follows the call of spirit. I really do. And I've learned great lessons from all the great teachers of the different paths that I've encountered in my life. The wisdom of Buddha and Muhammad and Abraham and many, many others. And I know in my heart that we are all one. And I'm reminded of the inspirational words that Jesus spoke in the Sermon on the Mount. And he said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And I believe, you don't have to believe it, but I believe that we Pacificans are the peacemakers. But I stand here today before you conflicted. And I'm conflicted because the culture of Pacifica is so rife with factionalism, negativism, avoidism, and absolutism that the dream of Lew Hill remains to me unfulfilled even a half a century after he took his own life, in part, I believe, due to these very negative qualities which cause us so much strife even today. We are masters at playing the name, blame, and shame game. We attribute the worst motives to anyone we can't count in our corner. We choose to operate from a position of fear, not faith, and we do not trust. We do not feel safe enough to trust. And it prevents us from moving forward effectively. We come from many backgrounds. We're artists, activists, idealists, sons and daughters of every tribe of this great earth, and we're here to make a difference. We're all here to make a difference, a positive difference. We're builders. We're not destroyers. We have great powers available to us, the power of prayer, the power of our thoughts. We have the power to choose faith over fear. Martin Luther King said in 1958, "Men often hate each other because they fear each other. And they fear each other because they don't know each other. And they don't know each other because they cannot communicate. And they cannot communicate because they're separate." I'm here tonight to pray. I pray that we can choose the path of faith and trust and love. I believe, even still, as it's been written, "Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it shall be opened to you." I'm asking all of us to practice the conscious choice, the choice to choose harmony. Pacifica needs it. America needs it. Our planet needs it. Too much blood has been spilled. Too much healing needs to occur. Too much time has been lost. And too much work remains undone. Please release the incoherent absolutism that, in my belief, is no different in any way from our so-called president saying, "You're either with us or you're with the terrorists." This blood sport factionalism must cease. And I imagine, as Lenin said, "I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one." You know, my teacher said, "Judge not that ye not be judged." And I believe that the ghosts of our ancestors are watching, and they're waiting. And I just want to conclude with this, because it just sort of wraps it up. Gwendolyn Brooks said it. I couldn't say it this well. She said, "Our earth is round. And among other things, that means that you and I can hold completely different points of view and both be right." And that's my sermon.
The benediction.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm proud of you about a lot of things. I'm extremely proud of you now because I know how difficult this is for you. And I hope that we heard you from the deepest depths of my heart. And I promise you that I will do my absolute best to get right to where you're trying to take us from the deepest depths of my heart. And I thank you for that, because it takes a lot of courage to stand up before us when we're trying so hard not to get along and speak to us about the higher ground. And I really thank you for that.
I've never seen anybody else make them speechless, have you? Lisa.
I also was, you know, extremely touched by what you said. And, of course, what I heard that really stands out about what you said is that you're from New Jersey. So that's like really. But having said that and having to get, you know, down to some of the business here,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about a couple of things. One of the things, so I remember a letter that I still have from last year regarding concerns that people spoke pertaining to Black History Month and the programming. And then I heard a young lady here, Akua Holt, also mention her extreme concern about the programming for Black History Month. And I see in the report that you have, I know you make reference to to programming, but I want to know more specifics about what was being done, the outreach with the community, because you're kind of general, and if there were any specific details about how KPFT is working toward correcting this and some of the steps that you all are taking.
Sure. One of the first things that we did to make Black History Month more available than it had been in the past was we moved our fund drive up to begin this past week, which created some of the conflict that we spoke of earlier with being in fund drive already while a board meeting is going on, so that the majority of the month would not be locked into a fund drive mode. Ernesto Aguilar, the program director, has been working with one of our part-time news employees, a woman from the Black community, Cassandra Ashley, and she has been working directly with Dr. Bethune and with Akua Holt and with practically all of the Black programmers at KPFT to formulate some concepts that we are going to be using in the duration of the month, starting the day after our fund drive ends, beginning on Tuesday the 12th or 13th of February. Every day from noon to 1 o'clock, a community open space called Open Journal, a space that people who are members of KPFT are encouraged to submit proposals to try out new concepts, to put a one-shot program, to do a special edition of something. All of the programs that had already been booked, because this books up months ahead, all of those programs have been reserved for special Black History Month programs. And different people are taking different angles on it, like Dr. Bethune is going to be doing one on heroines. We have a great volunteer named Mo Roberts who he's going to take the Malcolm X and James Baldwin archival footage and not only just play it again, which would be good enough because it's good programming, but we've talked to him about recontextualizing that for now to bring it into today. Dr. Bethune and a great local artist and former jazz programmer at KPFT, a gentleman named Tierney Malone, are writing scripts for something that we're calling 100 Great Moments in Black History, not Black History Month, but 100 Great Moments in Black History, and we will be running those throughout the month, even during the fund drive, as soon as they're produced. We hope that if all 100 are produced, that we can then run 3 or 4 every day. And I see no reason why we limit ourselves to that month, but this is at least a start. And indeed, our hope is that we can take this and share it with everybody else and expand upon that. There are 12 hour long programs that will be built through the month, beyond which all of our programmers are going to be encouraged to work to facilitate special programs within the existing program structure. So that's some of it.
I guess if I may, to just along the same line of thinking, I would just like to know what other steps that KPFT is taking for diversity in general. I see that you talk, you mentioned the summer youth program and outreach aimed at minorities, but again, that word is very general. So if you could talk a little bit more specifically about what the station is doing to get more diversity, not just with the African American community, but with other mm-hmm. communities of color as well.
Sure. We're looking at the future of KPFT as a future that needs to bring the next generation of Pacificans into the family, and so we are bringing youth into the station. We are building a summer youth training program, a 10-week-long program that we've already run this previous summer, that we'll be running again, bringing high school kids and even junior high kids and college youth into the studios of the station. We are working to build relationships with some of the farther-flung communities in southwest Houston to put audio production facilities. In this discussion about technology, which I missed a lot of the discussions here, and I'm sorry that I have had to be or try to be in two places at one time so much this weekend. But the technology is getting to the point where, you know, a laptop and a mixing board and a microphone, and there are a lot of people now who can create home studios. And we're working with some of the folks in the Asian community and in the African community out on the west side of Houston to establish a training facility. We are going to be doing town hall meetings to ascertain some of the needs of the communities that are underrepresented at KPFT. I'm working with Dr. Obadike Kamau at Texas Southern University to hold a town hall meeting at Texas Southern University, and even bringing into relationship with KPFT the KTSU community. Texas Southern University has its own radio station, and we're bringing them into a town hall meeting format with us to be held out at TSU. I hope to expand on what Brian began just the other day with the presentation of the archives to TSU to get more students exposed to the legacy that is Pacifica. There are a lot of really interesting possibilities that the folks in the TSU archives and at the library there at the school feel we can do with podcasting some of this material, creating MP3s for kids to use in curriculum at the schools, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some things, but that's some of it.
Okay, Michael, we have about 8 minutes left, and I would like a minute to.
Okay, that was really nice, and I appreciate you know, all the work you do. You're at the station now, pitching, and you do a great job at that, and you're here. And I mean, I'm you work very hard, and I mean, I'm almost too humbled to say that, because like, you've been in the community since 74, and sometimes it's even hard to talk to you because you're like such a presence. So, but anyway, having said that, you know, I'm wondering. I think there's a culture where you know, the weekday, where a lot of the I would think so-called progressive programming, you know, public affairs, whatever, takes place, you know, during the week, and it raises around 13,000, and then on the weekend, where it's largely music, it raises 26. So the way I read it is that you really can't touch some of the programming that was existing when the so-called, I mean, there was a take back, but in Houston I like to call it a so-called take back, because I'm not real clear. Anyway, that's a different issue. Do you agree with me that the programming is not as progressive as it might be, and is there a tension in the station yet that might create some of the pressure that you may be feeling that was a source for that sermonette?
And if you could, not needing to truncate, but since we only have 5 minutes left, I saw another hand. If you couldn't do it in a couple minutes, that would help.
Yeah. I'm not really sure how to bite onto that, Michael. There's a dynamic there in place that has created some of the tension that's created the reality that I get to deal with. And part of that is the economic reality that there are pre-existing, pre-revolutionary programming still on the airwaves of KPFT, in part because it has a massive following, both membership numbers-wise and extremely high numbers dollar-wise. And, you know, the Texas music that's on Saturday, the blues block on Sunday have been referenced by folks as untouchable because of that. It's hard to argue with success, and these programs are very successful, and they are as arguably Pacifican as anything else we do. You can debate the progressivism of any given program. And that's part of, I think, a debate that needs to be had on as wide a table as possible. And that's why I'm glad that we were able to create a program council, and that people like Dr. Bethune, you know, have helped guide that initial council to work with the program director. So it's not a brain or two or three, but it's at least a dozen, and even more with input from the community that analyzes all of this different information.
Thank you.
It's constantly fluid and evolutionary.
Bob, did you have your hand up? Go ahead.
Wayne, thanks for your sermonette. It was very moving, and I share a lot of your sentiment about the way some people treat each other within Pacifica. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for you, which goes back to the day 6 years ago when you and I were part of the movement that stood up and organized a powerful protest at one of these meetings and demanded that the hijackers on this board mm-hmm. then resign, and that paved the way to all the changes that came later. And in that context, I want to follow up on what Michael asked, because I'm still having trouble grasping why 4 years after the take back I hear what you're saying about the weekend programming and music, but I want to focus on weekday drive time, 6 to 9 a.m., okay. Which is really the highest listenership, and where, as far as I know, every other station in Pacifica has some degree of that time is very hard-hitting public affairs and news. And so my question is, one about the maintaining, why is there a maintenance of 6 to 8 a.m. music? And why from 8 to 9 is BBC the chosen vehicle for news, given that they come out of a very mainstream and kind of corporate background, and also one that's not indigenous to the United States and kind of community, reflecting community voices in Houston, let alone in the country.
And Dwayne, before you answer that, I'm going to follow with my comment because it's germane.
Okay.
And you can take them both together. You know, one of the things I've always talked about that take back movement was the fact that it was a response to what was a form of structural adjustment. And one of the things is when you have a structurally adjusted economy, it doesn't matter what the politics or the person at the top are, they'll have to make certain decisions based on their integration into the global economic system. And I always think one of the best examples is Cardoso in Brazil, who spent his life in the land reform movements, but because that economy was effectively structurally adjusted, once he got into that position, he's dealing with forces that he has to negotiate between his own political views and the realities of, you know, having budget constraints that if you don't address, you know, you go into economic collapse. And I feel like I also want to say that with respect to the sermonette, and I'm just going to take a moment to say something about our general manager. We had that level of factionalization and vituperation in Los Angeles. And I think one of the things that KPFK, and I think credit goes to our manager, our program director, but much broader than that, is that enough was given to the various sides in the struggle that the most strident voices lost their ability to polarize the situation because most people felt that there had been a really effective attempt to address the whole range of legitimate needs. And rather than, as we moved away from the audience that had been our primary financial support, what we found was we actually did better. We got a wider diversity, even though we had less listening time from some of them. So I guess I'm going to return to Bob's question. You don't need to answer anything that I said, but I just want to say that I feel like, on the one hand, I understand the situation that the being in that chair puts you in, because I was constantly attacked in the lawsuits for not saying enough and not being aggressive enough, and I couldn't. As lab chair and as a litigant, there was a lot I couldn't say, even though I'd done a lot of work on behalf of some of the things that the people who were attacking me for claimed I was against. But so I understand that dynamic. But so with that as a backdrop, maybe you could respond to Bob's questions.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to contextualize what you reference as 6 to 9 as being the prime drive time listenership. Houston is such a car based sprawl oriented city that in Houston drive time is from 5 a.m. until 10 a.m. And I consider Amy Goodman on at 9 a.m. to still be in drive time, and we can debate how many buses run at 7 o'clock from the outlying regions to downtown at 7 versus 9, and how many would listen to her on their iPods or whatever. But the program that's on from 6 to 8 is not a music program. It's largely a music-based program, but we've been consistently adding news elements, public affairs elements. There's everything from poetry to news to traffic and weather and interviews and performance, and there's music being played as well. And it's, to me, it's an evolution of a program into a magazine format. Is it Wake Up Call? No. Is it Uprising? No. But is it not just a music program? Yes. And as far as the BBC, the relationship that Pacifica in Houston and the BBC has predates my being even the program director back in the mid-'80s. This is something that has been... Houston has an amazing international population. Because of the oil business, we have people from all over the planet. And the relationship that Houston has to West Africa, to the Caribbean, to Central and South America, to Asia, and to Europe is enormous. And there are many, many communities of color, and there are many, many expatriates working in Houston because of that relationship who find a bit of home in having the BBC on the radio in Houston, and I don't want to denigrate the BBC at all, but I consider it to almost be a gateway drug into KPFT. And I challenge anyone who wants to remove it or challenges its relevance to being in the schedule grid on KPFT to find a more far-reaching and comprehensive and far-flung around the entire planet from here to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. There are journalists working for the BBC filing reports, and people find value in that and have found value in that for well over 20 years on KPFT. And the fact that it's on at 8 o'clock in the morning is strictly a fact based on the availability of the BBC News Hour, which is only broadcast twice a day. And consistently, even whatever time of year it is, daylight savings or regular, it's always on at 8 a.m. Central Time. It has a prior hour which flip-flops on the different halves of the year. So half of the year it would be at 6 and half of the year it would be at 7. And we can't keep changing our schedule every 6 months because the BBC is flip-flopping a particular program. And you can't tape delay news. So that's the reason why it's there. It's a very valuable program, I believe. And again, I'm just one person, though.
Okay, and with that, we're going to have to go on to the New York station. Thank you very much, Dwayne. We appreciate it. I hope you'll be able to stick around in the hallway because I'm sure a lot of people would want to continue some of the discussion there.
And I want to thank everybody who signed up on pledge forms, and we'll be bringing you T-shirts tomorrow.